Feeding Matters understands the significant financial difficulty that comes with supporting a loved one with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, and avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Each fall, we open the Family Assistance Program. Since 2019, we've awarded $40,000 to families throughout the United States. Applications for the 2025 cycle are currently being accepted and are due Friday, October 10th. Feeding Matters will award $1,000 grants to 10 families. Learn more and apply today at feedingmatters.org/family-assistance. That's feedingmatters.org/family-assistance.
Presented by Feeding Matters with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Welcome, everyone, to Feeding Does Matter. My name is Jacqueline Peterson. I am CEO of Feeding Matters, and typically I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Haley Estrom, who isn't able to be with me today. So it's just me and our very special guest. Denise Hoffman is who is joining us today and has been a part of our community for a while. So we're really excited to have her on the podcast. We at Feeding Matters have such a strong community of both parents, professionals, and now even some patients and individuals with lived experience that really join us to make our community what it is. And you're such a significant part of that. So we thought it would be great to have you on to tell your story and just give your insights into how you've been a part of this organization and then what you do to support everyone in this community. And so I think I'll just kick it to you to introduce yourself if that works.
Yes, thank you. So I'm Denise. I am a mother of two children. And one we're going to talk a little bit about today, and that is my son who was born premature. And a little bit of background about me is I have a clinical doctorate degree in occupational therapy. So even before I had children, I was working with children with feeding and eating concerns, and that was my passion. And then I had my dear son who experienced his own challenges. So it just led me to many different directions, and eventually it led me to Feeding Matters.
Thank you, Denise. I always think it's so interesting how many of us, because I put myself in this category too, who had experience and exposure to this field, kind of more on the professional side, that ended up being a parent on the patient side of it almost as well. So you really kind of span both worlds in all of the ways. So let's dive into your family story a little bit about your son. Typically what we share with our families is whatever they feel comfortable sharing, because it's so hard to capture all of the years of struggle and trial and error and sleepless nights in such a short podcast. So whatever you feel comfortable sharing, we would love to hear and learn from you and learn about your lived experience.
Yeah. So my son is 24 years of age now, and I didn't come and find out about Feeding Matters until 2018, which I can't believe as a therapist, I didn't know about this, but I also can't believe as a parent that somebody in the medical field and me going through years of this, nobody exposed me to this as a parent or to resources to help me as a parent. So that's a little bit about my journey. Trey was born 3 months premature, and we spent quite a bit of time in the hospital, and he was born with a brain bleed. And that affected his breathing and his eating and his swallowing. And so for several years, we had a lot of alternative diets for oral intake and other medical needs, working with a GI specialist, which eventually turned into eating all foods, but turned into several food allergies that affected his GI system. And over the years, it affected his self-esteem, and it affected his ability to gain weight. And I said he's 24. And when I stumbled across the the organization in 2018. This was when my son started experiencing some mental health issues with feeding, eating, and swallowing as a teenager, and reliving some prior feeding and eating and swallowing issues, but navigating it now as a teenager and more mental health issues that didn't manifest when he was younger. And so now he's got a diagnosis of malnutrition. And coming to going to a pediatrician and again, not feeling like I had support and trying to navigate a boy with malnutrition and pandemic eventually hit a few years later. And that just challenged communication with medical providers. It was, I could tell you, invaluable, the resources that I gained and from talking with people within this organization. And so that's just really briefly, I could go on and on and on, but that's really briefly. There was an individual, Heidi is her name, and she works for the organization. And not only, like you said, Jacqueline, talking to people that work for the organization that have prior experience, but have personal experience. And finally connecting with somebody, even though it was another mother that had a different journey, but yeah, knowing that our kids grow up, and still having support when a kid grows up, those are, I think, where I am feeling a calling to help, because our kids grow up and they're in their teens and their young adult, and that's where we still need to help support our parents because it still affects us.
Yeah, that's so true, Denise. And because you and your son have been on such a journey together, but that journey kind of changes depending on the phase of life and where you're at and where he's at. And we do see it gets so much more complex and especially really challenging from the mental health side as they're getting older. And so it sounds like in your case, in his case, that became the primary driver of what you guys needed support on, even outside of the malnutrition diagnosis. Would that be an okay way to describe that?
Yes, that was definitely a strong layer that would describe that. And I think that was one thing that working with Feeding Matters and looking at feeding concerns and looking at feeding almost like across the lifespan, even though we're still, you know, young into our lifespan. But some of these concerns that parents with even kids that have G-tubes or other feeding issues, these evolve as kids, you know, get older. And what does that look like? And just the mental aspect that as my son got older, how he was, you know, completely cognitive and aware of things that are going on and how it just manifested. And it's something that I wasn't prepared for, not that I was prepared to have a child that was premature, but having the support and knowing that I could reach out to Feeding Matters truly was something that I was able to continually reach out to. And that evolved into me being able to give back as a mentor, as through the family support program, the Power of Two, because we're not experts in every area, but we are experts in understanding our journey. And sometimes that's all you need, is to have a very open heart and an open ear, and that sometimes just what a family member needs, a caregiver, a parent, because these aren't like I can just take off glasses and the feeding issue goes away. It's always there.
No, always there. Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like you were able to take the support that you received when you first reached out to be able to be that for other families. Tell me about that journey, I guess, a little bit, and how you approach supporting our families that call us through that program. I think a lot of people are really nervous to figure out what reaching out looks like. And we often find people that say, I wish I found you so many years ago. But we've also seen people who have said, I was told to reach out to you, but it took a while for me to reach out. And I think there's just such a you're just dealing with so much that it feels like one more thing to reach out. So I guess, how do you approach supporting families, and what would you share with families that are kind of stuck in that cycle?
Right. Those are really good questions. And I know, as a parent, to tell your story one more time to somebody that you might feel, you know, might not understand or might judge you, or like just like another medical provider. I feel like when I was in the middle of some of my son's, and I would use the word a crisis, and it's like I'm in the middle of an ocean and I can't swim to shore. And so those are times that I could not make a lot of decisions, and I could not talk to a lot of people because I was just handling what I could handle, what was presented in front of me. And so sometimes I would tell families that this might not be the time that you need a mentor, you want to talk to somebody, you want to talk to the organization, but knowing that this resource is steady and it's consistent and it's here when you are ready to reach out, to even read something online or to reach out if you want to talk to somebody, those options are available. Because sometimes you don't know when you're ready to reach out. And then when you do reach out, the floodgates might open up. It's just such a journey. And then all of a sudden you got a phone call that you didn't expect, and then your journey pivots. So it's a roller coaster. And that's what I really have gained from the Power of Two through Feeding Matters, is it's okay to call, it's okay to text, and sometimes it's okay just to email, because sometimes that's where you are in life. And I thought those options are great for me at different times in my life. And so I share that back to families. And I know it sounds almost too simple, but when you're in the middle, for me, in my journey, in my words, when I was in the middle of, you know, everything going on, if somebody could just say, I'm going to call you or I'm going to text you, and there's no expectations for you to text back. If you text back in 2 months, we're good. That was what I needed at that time.
Oh, I love that, because that does take that pressure off. I think we're in such a culture of, I need to get back to this person, and it just feels like one more thing on the list. But the point of this program is to be that support system in whatever that looks like. And your point about, too, that it's not even just the coaching and the support mechanism, but there's like the resources that, like, it's kind of almost at as much as you can engage is what we are there for you. If it's just being there on social media for you to scroll and see that, like, it's okay to take a break, or it's okay to do this for yourself, like, that's a powerful mechanism of support, all the way up into, do you have a coach that's texting you all the time, and what does that look like?
And emotionally, that might be where some people are at. They need that to talk to. But emotionally, I know I talked to one person, and this person, when they filled out the intake, they wanted something. And then when we connected, that's not what they wanted. And so we pivot. We were flexible. And this is, they just wanted to look at the resources. That's great. But I needed to make sure I heard that, and I respected that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because that's, a lot of times we talk on this podcast about, because every family's at an individual place, we need to make sure we're individualizing things to what they need. And I feel like that's kind of the occupational therapist in you as well. So maybe tell me a little bit about, because I know you shared that you were a professional and then you had your own experience with your son and your son had his experience. Did that change anything in your career? Did you have to pause or pivot? Or how do you think about being on occupational therapy now, living through it as a lived experience side?
Yes, I did pause and I did pivot, and I did take a year off of full-time work. And then when I did go back, I only worked part-time, and I made sure that I was available to do all of my son's feedings. And I was very particular about who fed my son. But the thing that changed me as a therapist and working with families is I completely thought about their family dynamics. because I also had another child, an 18-month-old at home. And so this completely changed because, you know, I'm giving my families home exercise programs, or, oh, you got to do this oral warm-up exercise. Now you have to have this specialized diet. Now you have to do this sensory diet. And, you know, not even considering how they have other family things going on. And, oh, the child's sick that day. We couldn't get it in. The stressors that some of these caregivers wouldn't say, but I could see that they didn't get things done and they didn't want to come back to therapy the next week. So it really put in perspective now that I'm home and I'm like, I can't believe a week just went by and I haven't even done any therapy with my own son. So it just made me completely pivot. And it's not just about individual therapy. It's definitely family therapy at any age. There's too many variables that how can I not talk about them, look at them, and have the family unit come together. So I just really try to be mindful of that.
Yeah, it's really important because it is so interrelated and that's what your mealtimes are. And we had someone on too that talked about, because she had multiple kids and so she had struggles with putting one child's needs above the others and what that impact that had on the whole family. And so it is helpful to approach the whole family holistically in terms of what the, I guess, expectation is for those exercises and practices and what you're doing outside of the therapy that you may be doing each week. Tell me, I guess, more about, because you support families in our Power of Two program, but you've also done a lot of other committee work and resource development work with us. Do you want to tell me about a project you've been on or some other capacity that you've served in Feeding Matters?
Yeah, so I worked with a group of individuals. We all had a different background, from speech therapy to physician, audiology, but a variety of different backgrounds. And we wrote basically like a manual of different diagnoses, different definitions, and just helpful information regarding terminology around pediatric feeding disorder and other related content. And so that was really helpful to work and collaborate on a team. And this was as the diagnosis was rolling out. And that's kind of a nice little handbook for families, because a lot of times I think families can go to the internet for anything, and or just myself. And, you know, you look at one thing and it just kind of rolls and pivots to another thing. So this is just something
nice. Spirals sometimes.
Yeah. And then 2 hours later, we're like, oh my gosh. So I just thought that that was really fun to work on an interprofessional team, that we collaborated and would work on the phraseology together. So it truly wasn't just from one scope of practice. It had multiple perspectives and multiple language collaborating. So hopefully the content and the takeaway was really well received from a variety of families that were able to use the book.
Yeah, I will tell you, Denise, that that is one of our favorite resources. And we are just so grateful to you and the others that served on that committee to develop that, because it does serve as like, it is overwhelming to know what do you need to know about this, and what questions do you ask? How do you figure out what provider you need to talk to? What kind of tests might be out there, and all of the different things, and how do you take care of yourself and advocate for your child and your family? And so we hear from so many people how important that guide is. And then we also have many different providers that link to that guide as well. So it may be like, a family didn't necessarily like come to us directly, but they're being serviced by a certain provider and then they are introduced to that guide. So it does have impact and reach far and wide. And it's because of your work in collaboration to really support families through that guide.
That's wonderful. I think I talked with a family from overseas that had access to that guide. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, and that's the power of the internet, too.
Because some families don't have access to a lot on the internet or don't have access to certain books or resources that we might have in the U.S. So that book can be all that they might have access to.
Yep, that's true. And I think also in a time when it's just overwhelming how much information we have, and that's I kind of felt like that as a new parent. There was just so much information that I was trying to consume, and not knowing what information to pay attention to was really hard too. So you guys collating that all together was really helpful as well.
Well, and I think too, there's just, when you go to the website, there's just something for everybody. And I think that was what was just so helpful. The checklist that was helpful. There was just a lot of resources that I referred different families to. What do you think about this? Or check about this, that we're just, there's such a gap still. We're going to, you know, specialists, we're going to a variety of things. But when you mentioned that, you know, other organizations are, you know, tying that in or linking to us, that's what I'm really excited to see, is how many people are doing that, because that just reinforces the power of making sure we're talking about feeding, eating, and swallowing. And I've been working in the schools a lot as well, and how much more we're making sure that students are even safe and healthy in the schools. And that's another area, because people don't want to send their kids to school, because how many people, you know, feel comfortable and safe sending their kids to school, whether, you know, I had, you know, food allergies or just all the other equipment and different things that go along with who's going to train them and who's going to be there.
I was going to say, I think, you know, you're right. School is such a big impact. And how, it sounds like you mentioned this a little bit, but how was school for your son? Did you just do a lot of self-advocacy with the school or training even? Because we do find parents really scared to send their kids to school just because of the safety challenges, the misinterpretation of what this is, lots of different needs there.
Yeah, so I advocated a lot. I was in the school a lot. I made sure that I was, I changed my work hours. So I was a parent volunteer. I just made myself very present. And I probably wasn't, they're like, oh, here comes his mom again. But I was at every party. So I made sure, you know, I knew what he ate, what he didn't eat. I packed every single lunch for him. My house was, you know, dairy-free, gluten-free. So it was very controlled, because I made sure it was very controlled. But that was also very exhausting.
Yeah, and that's a lot to carry.
You know, and parents, we just do it and we don't think about it. And it becomes, that's just, but, you know, we have to go that extra mile, because we advocate for our children. And I would teach my son how to advocate for himself, just like my daughter now advocates. She's a paramedic and a firefighter, and she advocates all the time for individuals that are non-speaking and have different needs, as she picks them up and she can make sure she advocates so they're getting safe transportation by first responders. But, wow. You know. Mm-hmm. She, you know, I just had to teach my child to advocate. And that's another thing that you mentioned, the book is so helpful. Even myself, like, I didn't always ask, or I still don't always know all the answers, or I don't always know what questions to ask, or I might feel embarrassed to ask a question. So I try to make sure, even when I'm talking to my son who lives, you know, on his own, and, you know, he's working and he's, you know, contributing to society and he's working on his mental health. And I'm still working on teaching him how to advocate for his health, his safety. And, so we're working on that. But I think that's the biggest thing, is to teach parents to make sure they're advocating for themselves and making sure they're advocating for their child, because who else is going to?
Right. Like, that's, I think, the challenge is who else is going to. How was that process as he got older, where there was less control there, you know, as especially on a journey from feeding to eating and a lot of like parent supported things and parent partnered things to he's out in the world on his own now. That sort of journey and loss of control is, I think, hard for every parent, but especially a parent where meals in general that are everywhere had to be so controlled. How did that transition go for both of you as you were learning from each other?
Well, and that's where he wanted to get out from me and my, what he felt was I was over controlling. So he wanted to experiment with things and he wanted to try things and he would get sick. And he landed in the hospital many times in the past 5 years. And it's difficult to know that he's in the hospital and, you know, he's over 18. So it's difficult for me to be completely involved. So sometimes, So he's, you know, his own person. He has makes his own medical choices. But sometimes I'll get a call at 2 a.m. Mom, I'm in the hospital and I need help. So those are difficult calls, but that's kind of where his mental health and where his condition has evolved. And he's on a healthy journey to, we know what direction we're going in. But there was 4 to 5 years that have been a challenge from 2018 till up to about last year. And we all experienced different journeys, but those were the journeys that were probably the hardest for me was knowing that he was making choices that weren't healthy and that he would end up in the hospital.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's almost him learning about his own condition in this new phase of life that he's in. And every kid goes through the different phases. But it does point to, and this is something we've thought about a lot at Feeding Matters, is those patients and adults with lived experience that are trying to navigate this system that doesn't have a lot of support and doesn't have a lot of information, they're kind of out there, and we know we need to do a lot more to support them. I think we're so used to supporting families too, but you can see that our individuals with lived experience need a different type of support to really navigate this on their own and how they are doing with it. It just is another reason why that support piece is so different for each person.
And a family can be defined as a single young adult, a young 20-year-old. These young adults are developing their own family, and that's, as they're transitioning from our care into that, that's definitely where I'm still navigating and figuring that out.
Oh, I love that. It is true, because we talk a lot about what are the definitions of the words we're using and are we understanding each other? And that is the definition of a family, can be a single young adult as well, or a single adult. Thank you so much for sharing, Denise. Is there anything that you didn't have a chance to share that maybe came up in our conversation as we start to narrow in to the end of it?
I would just say that you, as a parent, as a caregiver, just love your child. And if you feel like you are not getting answers, then it is your right to ask for second opinions or look for support groups, because there's somebody out there that can help you navigate to get some answers. And definitely turn to Feeding Matters, because they might not have all the answers, but they will certainly help to give you some support and help get you some guidance. And sometimes that's all we need when we're in the middle of the ocean to help guide us to swim to shore.
Oh, yes, Denise. That's just so very true, because I feel like so much of the time we want to have the answers, but sometimes the answer isn't anything besides we will sit with you in this moment and we will swim beside you in this journey to get out of this chaos that you're in right now, and know that, like, we're here with you, that I know that there's not great answers, but you're not in this alone. And that's important for you to know. That's important for anyone out there listening. You're not alone in this.
Yes.
Well, Denise, I just am truly thankful for all that you've done to support our families, both as a coach and then the impact you've had in contribution to the family guide that is shared so broadly, and to the impact you had on your son's life. And it sounds like your daughter's life too is such an amazing, all helping careers. And so the last question that we always ask our guests is, really related to how can we incorporate lived experience into the research? Because, and I'm sure you know this as an occupational therapist too, and when we were talking about implementing those treatment exercises and kind of homework between therapies, is so much of the research doesn't take into account what families are experiencing. And so what's your message to researchers to help them think about the lived experience as they think about improving and advancing this field?
So I love that we're asking professionals. I would continue to ask professionals, but also make sure that we're asking families and including families' voice in research and how they're experiencing, and the child, whether the child is 3 and is using a communication device and we figure out how to ask questions at that level, or the child like mine is 24 and we come up with questions to ask what they feel about their journey. I just think that their perspective is going to look very different than mine. So if we can just bring in all of the authentic voices, that is just going to help bridge all the gaps that we still have out there.
I think that's such a great answer. It's so true, because I think we're not getting the full picture, and hearing from all the voices is how we're able to get a step closer to getting the full picture of what families really need. Well, Denise, thank you so much for joining us today. And to those listening, we are here for you. There's many different support programs that we have at Feeding Matters. If you are looking for a coach and want to talk to them, or if you want to read the family guide, that's available on our website too. The easiest place to start is by going to our website and hitting Get Help, and it takes you to a roadmap that you can follow if you're a new parent to this. And so, Denise, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate you.
Thank you. And thank you to Feeding Matters. They have been so instrumental. So, Jacqueline, thank you for this organization.
Yeah, definitely. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
When supporting a loved one with feeding differences, it's easy to feel like you're alone. At Feeding Matters, our hope is for you to find the community, resources, and support that you need. Through our Power of Two parent-to-parent mentoring program, parents in need of support are matched with one of our volunteer family coaches who have lived experience with their own child and can offer emotional support, resources, and guidance to lessen the isolation that families often face with pediatric feeding disorder, as well as avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. Families can request a one-time phone call or a 3-month or 6-month match by filling out the request form on our website. A family coach will make contact via text or email first to set up a phone or video call, typically within 2 to 3 days. For more information, please contact us at 623-242-5234, extension 1, or at feedingmatters.org. And please remember, you're not alone.